This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 135 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where some of us are still dealing with a con hangover, and possibly some of us are dealing with an actual one. So we're going to let the panel at WhoFest 2 take a crack at a topic that we here at GPR have actually broached before, and we're just going to turn the volume down in here and kill the lights and just pray to God that we get through this evening. We swear we will never drink again, ever. Ever, ever.
Okay, Keir, do you have to shout? Come on, man. Please.
You do have independent volume control on your headphones, Jay. I'm just saying.
This is the cast where everyone was muted.
We're actually just going to signal at the microphones. So for those of you with daredevil-esque hearing, you'll be able to understand the gestures we're making. Here in the very quiet and very... slow-moving GPR studio. I am Keir. Joining me, as always, is Jay. Jay, are you okay over there?
I think I'll be okay. I just need a Bloody Mary or something to get me through.
Yeah, you know, it's because it's got vegetables in it, so you know that's
it's good for it's you. Healthy. Yeah, exactly.
And I think we just woke up Haley. So Haley's
fine. I'm fine. I had like a screwdriver, so we're good to go.
Okay. So this week we're going to share with you a panel from Dallas recent WhoFest convention about the changes that could theoretically improve the writing of the show, balanced against the discussion of whether such changes are really needed or even warranted.
Mm. Yeah, it seems to be something that a lot of Whovian groups like to discuss because it's, you know, whether it's a matter of contentedness or lack of, you know, contentedness with the current state of the program, but everybody's got their two cents. But it's always good when you get a panel of individuals with some good working knowledge of either the program, the process, you know, writers in their own rights and things, who can come at it from slightly different angles instead of just saying, well, I would write episodes that take place, you know, in deep space and get off of all of these, you know, earthbound adventures or something, where it's more of a personal choice rather than something that actually looks at the viability of those choices as they affect the show going on. So
yeah. So we're going to go ahead and play that panel now. Just word of warning, the shotgun microphone that we had with us didn't really like the adapter that we had, and well, it was a long drive home to pick up the proper one. So the audio is coming through the room mic. You can still get the gist and stuff. I've worked on cleaning it up for everybody so you don't hear what I heard in the headphones.
Right, and for future events, well, I've got that adapter just already fused to the shotgun mic, so we're learning.
So if you hear a couple things here and there, it's just that was unfortunately the nature of the room that we were in, but hopefully you'll enjoy this panel.
My name is Tim Miller. I'm moderator. I'm one of the organizers for WhoFest, and I want to thank each and every one of you for coming. No. Tim, I'm a Doctor Who fan for a long, long time. Let's go down the line.
All right. I'm Derek Compare. I've been a Doctor Who fan for a long, long time as well.
My name is Sean Homrick from the podcast Tardis Tavern and the Doctor Who Book Club.
And I don't know, I guess I've been a Doctor Who fan for a long time.
I'm Bob Waller. I've been a Doctor Who fan since the late 70s. So I don't know how long anybody else has been a fan, but
Kathy Sullivan. I've been a Doctor Who fan for a long time and reviewed a lot of the things way back in the day. And we have...
Michael Ashley Finn. I am a speculative fiction writer who has literally been a fan longer than I can remember. And I'm crashing this panel. I'm not on the list.
Okay, so the subject, do we need a regeneration in the writing room? Now, are we just talking about a fresh crop of writers, or is Stephen Moffat evil or genius? And does he need to stay, or does he need to be drawn and quartered? And if he needs to be drawn and quartered, do we need to make sure we do something worse to Russell T. Davies? Because I'm a Moffat fan, but I don't think he's perfect. Yeah. I love Russell T. Davies for bringing the show back, but I don't like a lot of what he did. So I think Moffat is, and people will argue with me on this one, is better, much better at science fiction than Russell T. Davies. Russell T. Davies is better at drama than Stephen Moffat, but Moffat has great comedic timing, and great comedic timing can mean great dramatic horror timing.
Yes. Because,
you know, that setup for a joke can be just the same setup for the boo gotcha to, you know, freak you out and scare you. And so,
however, sometimes kind of his idea of comedic timing goes on too long.
Yeah.
Yes. And define comedic. Well, not define comedic time. What what points in Moffat scripts are perfect examples of good comedic timing?
Oh, I wouldn't be picking the good. I'd be going. You have a train going into a pyramid, and you have all these other things, and that everything happening all at once didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that episode did not
end. Yeah, there.
No, but it has Alex Kingston in it, so it's okay.
Good comic timing.
Because I can name a few.
Please,
outside of coupling.
Outside of first title death.
Or chalk.
Does it have to be from any of his producers? Or is any writer?
No, as a writer, yeah.
Okay. Girl in the Fireplace. Where have you been? Oh, you know, here and there, seeing the sights. Oh, made a friend of the horse.
You're Scottish. Try something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
Okay. The doctor. The speech to the bunny rabbit.
Are we talking the straight comedic timing, or are we talking the comedic timing turned horror?
I'm actually comedic timing turned horror.
Yeah.
Horror. Horror. I'm on the con committee, so I don't sleep.
I apologize. Oh. Okay. Well. No. Really. Duck.
Yes. Right. Yes. By far.
No, really. No.
That's the exact right. So.
The no really duck thing is funny, and that's one of his best scripts. That's Blink, of course.
Yes.
But the thing about Moffat is, even though it's funny, he sacrifices things like the horror. That, you know, he throws in a good horror element, or he throws in a good joke, and logic and common sense just go completely out the door. The idea of the Statue of Liberty being a blinking, weeping angel is really...
I have huge problems with that.
Moving across the city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then when you turn the TV off, you walk away, and you're like, you know what, that was really dumb.
Right.
Yeah. Why does he have all those babies in the basement? Why does he put them in the basement? You know, it's nothing's ever explained. It's like, it's all style over substance.
And here's the thing. If he has two episodes, he explains stuff. He has one episode, he doesn't.
Yeah, this is true.
Look at all of his stuff for, not Girl in the Fireplace, but everything else that he did in Davies' tenure where he did put out the really good stories. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm contradicting myself again, because Blink, the ultimate, was a single episode as well. But a lot of times when he's got two episodes, he explains stuff. When he's got one, he's too rushed, and he just goes, screw it, I'm telling a story.
Right. Now, I will say that the problem I had with Russell T. Davies, he was so concerned about the drama and the character interaction that in many cases the story didn't matter. And I read an interview where he specifically said the science in the science fiction doesn't matter because in science fiction...
Well, it doesn't matter to Moffat either, really.
It matters more to Moffat. Yes, it's a problem. Because Moffat realizes it's time travel and you can have fun with time travel and do stuff.
while, and it's integral to the plot, while with Russell T. Davies and most of the other producers, the time travel is literally and figuratively the vehicle for setting up the situation where you get your adventure. So Moffat has been one of the few writers
Moffat's
to say, I've got a time machine, let's make this part of the plot. But what Russell T. Davies, what I was going on about, is the interview where he said that pretty much the great thing about science fiction is you can just explain it away in the writing. And that's the thing I hate about science fiction. As a science fiction fan, bad science fiction is that philosophy. Good science fiction is the, I want to explain this in a way that people won't go, huh, okay, but will think about and be, you know, compelling and kind of makes sense.
Well, not to open the can of worms of whether it's Doctor Who's actually science fiction or science fantasy, I tend to think it's the latter, which is basically...
Well, so is Star Trek and Star Wars.
Exactly, and by the same token, you know, that this is, it's given a little bit more of a license to be able to do these things because of the nature of the show. It's its own sort of baby with this. What I would say with Moffat, when in a time travel, I agree, it was nice to see that come in. I just think we've had a little bit too much of that flavor, basically,
yeah.
that's gotten a little bit too full of itself. And Kathy was bringing up about Wedding of River Song. I think that sort of that whole season was sort of the ultimate example of this. It's like it's all tiny whiny, it all comes back to this, and it's, yeah, I mean, okay, you know, you're clever, you tie this up together.
It makes sense.
Sometimes yeah. I think Moffat is too much in love with his own writing.
Hell yeah.
The problem that Moffat has, and I'm a fan of Moffat. I've met him at some conventions, and this is when he was, you know, right after season one came out, and Coupling had just finished, and I loved Coupling, and I was talking to him at a convention, and it occurred to me very, very quickly that this man's personality has its own gravitational field.
Yes.
I mean, you get near him and you just get sucked in and you may disappear. Any panel he is on...
Or get turned into a character.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, he takes charge of every situation and things become about him or his view. And so him being the main guy in the writer's room, I can see as an issue. I also think generally with most shows, especially something long-running like Who that has a history of this, 3 to 5 years is about the lifespan you want for a producer, just to get fresh blood. Even if you're doing great, in retrospect, because I was too young at the time and watching it in America, but Philip Hinchcliffe leaving when he did was horrible because he was the best producer ever, but where they went after that was also really cool and fun and exciting. And John Nathan Turner went on too long, but if he had left, the show would be canceled.
Right.
He wanted to leave.
He wanted to leave, but he was told, you leave, the show's done, and he loved Who too much, so he kept it on the air. Russell T. Davies forced the show back on the air, so I love him for that, even though I hated so much of what he did with the writing and how everything he did was set on Earth with people from Earth. And it's like, and so when the first episode, when he leaves Earth, where does he go? New Earth. And so
new Earth.
Yeah, it will eventually, yes.
So can I post like a hypo? Like, what if it was like the old days, not to be a curmudgeon, back in the old days, when you had a producer, a script editor, and some writers. Would the show fare better that way?
Yes.
The producer, we had a script editor, Mark Gatiss, and then instead everybody's like, somebody tell Steven that doesn't make any sense.
People needed to tell Russell T. Davies it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I'm horrible. Well, with episode titles, the Donna Noble go away episode, the last two-parter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Has some great scenes.
Stolen Earth and Journey's End.
Yeah.
I loved it, and as soon as I turned it off, I hated it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it at all, it's like, wait, no.
I didn't even get that far. As soon as the TARDIS started towing a planet, I was.
Yeah. Well, see, that really. Yeah, I agree with you. And I was. And of course, Although this is the kind of thing that if you're the Uber fan, when the TARDIS was designed in the 60s, the whole concept was it was laid out like it is so the one person could pilot it and move around. And then the new series got the concept that, oh, it's got six sides, so it's clearly designed
to be six pilots.
By six pilots. Yeah. And that's why he could never get where he wanted to go.
Excuse me, I think if you read the New Adventures, it says I don't really know that for sure.
I think part of what we saw in Miracle Day and what we've seen in some of these others is that they've tried for an edgier style, which, you know, the classic series did not have, was definitely still child friendly. And the new ones, which are, you know, there are some things I wouldn't want my grandson to see on Doctor Who, which is really a shame. And to be quite honest, sometimes it bothers me that it has gone quite that dark.
Doctor Who or Torchwood, you mean?
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who, like The Mummy, maybe, and The Orient Express, or?
There's definitely been, you know, the first one was Blink, which now, you know, it took me a long time to really like that episode. Now I do. But when it first came out, I was like, little kids shouldn't be watching this. This is just a little too scary.
Well, and also remember, the British version of what children can be exposed to for scariness is a higher or lower bar, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. Doctor Who scared the bejesus out of little kids in 1976 as well.
Davros and Genesis of the
Daleks. I was going to say the exact same thing. My 10-year-old son, when he was, the third word he ever said was exterminate. No.
So what were the first two?
Ice and eat. Ice, eat, exterminate. Not kidding.
Could that have happened because there was a Dalek right next to your front door?
Possibly. He loved watching Daleks. He really did. So as he was getting older, I was like going through my DVD collection, and then I put Genesis of the Daleks one day. And at the beginning of that, with the recreation of the trenches from World War I, except with World War II type equipment, and it's dark and it's scary, and then we meet Davros, and it's like, I have no problem with new series stuff. I turned that off because I was worried how it would affect him, and I could see he was getting uncomfortable watching that one. So, I mean, back in 76, there was still, you know.
When you figure the British at that time, we're still pretty close to that time period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You compare towns and
Wayne.
Don't mention the war.
Do you guys think that the British style of show running could be improved by having more of the American style of writers' room, where they actually have all the writers together working on scripts,
yes,
you know, as a unit, instead of just here's your script, here's your script, here's your script, here's bullet points on what you need to hit?
The trick with that is that in that American style, it's very serialized. So the shows are really tightly serialized, you know. So we could think of Battlestar Galactica, or, you know, The Wire, The Good Wife, you know, whatever. Like that Breaking Bad is a great example of this too. Mad Men, where there is sort of a central creative person who's created that, but they've got this sweeping story that they're telling. They're collectively telling it. Lost was like this too, right? So they're collectively telling this story. And then it becomes about, then the overall arc becomes a thing. Whereas in Doctor Who's never really worked like that. The overall arc is always taken the backseat to whatever the story of the week is. And I think that's its strength as a series. I wouldn't like to see it. So, you know, individual episodes become a little bit less memorable in that model. The individual things that particular writers bring to particular episodes get a little bit lost in that.
And
so even though particular writers are credited with episodes, and in the American system, and they may have done story beats, they may have broken out the story, the writing itself is very collective in that regard, whereas in the way that Doctor Who works, the writer still has that identity and a bit of, you know, Moffat's guy is taking everything on, obviously, on that, and what he wants it in, it's still going to be associated with that writer.
Another example of that, though, where it actually is more like the Doctor Who thing, was Leverage, where Chris Downey and John Rogers had the writers' room out there, but it's more individualized stories with a bit of an arc. I think Suits is done the same way, which is another Chris Downey show, and you've got an arc that weaves in between, which is who's good at, who's very, very good at, and I think that would actually capture the tone a little bit better, because the tone this season was all over the place.
Yeah.
But does it need to be consistent? I guess that's it's never been consistent, you know, really. And the times it has been, the new series under Moffat in particular, it hasn't, you know, worked as well. You know, when he's had sort of too strong of a hand.
Yeah.
And you know, with Jane Espenson, I saw her on a panel talking about Torchwood Miracle Day, and how that was literally a hybrid of the British writing room and the American writing room. I wanted to love it, and I hated it. And I thought too many episodes were just pure padding. If it were five episodes, it might have been good.
We talked about that in the Torchwood just before.
Where somebody said, what happened? Jane Espenson was involved. How did that turn out, Ben?
So the British system is very much, all right, here's our story, here's how the things kind of tie together, but you don't know everything, go write something, and they do lots and lots of rewrites. The American one is the writer's room, they hash everything out, and then pretty much the writer goes and develops the story, but he knows exactly where he's going and where he's starting and where he's ending, and they don't have many rewrites. And they tried a hybrid for Miracle Day, because they had American writers and British writers both working on it, and I don't think it worked well, but that just could have been the script, the budget, everything else. I don't know what happened, but...
It was mentioned last year, I think, maybe the year before, that Moffat said that he's more towards the end of his tenure than he is to the beginning. So maybe there's some sort of hope for that, but my main concern is I'm looking at what's coming out of, you know, the seasons and stuff, and looking who the writers are, and I can't think of a single writer who can take the show over. I mean, Mark Gatiss, he writes some brilliant stuff, but he's also written some really awful stuff as well.
He's a
terribly
mix.
Inconsistent. Terribly. I'm sorry, Cold War was... That's just my opinion.
Would you rather have... I mean, along those lines, I agree to accept, but would you rather have a writer like Russell Davies and Steve Moffat as writers, or would you rather have somebody who maybe wasn't as great a writer, but somebody who could manage well, is a better manager?
Well, that's the general problem we have nowadays, people are promoted to the point of incompetence. And it's not quite incompetence in this case, but maybe he's been pushed beyond his best area.
You need a producer or somebody in charge who may not be the best writer but understands how things work, so that when the writers say, I want to do this, it's like a good music producer. You get so many one-hit wonders because it's the producer that makes the talent shine. And that's what we need.
So look at Burton and Lucas, same thing. Mm-hmm. They both...
Well, that was Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof and Lost. That Cuse, J.J. Abrams brought Cuse in, and Lindelof, you know, highly recommended him, because Lindelof got to be sort of the more sort of speculative, you know, wild thinker of that, where Cuse was about doing, you know, 40-odd minutes of storytelling, you know, making the trains run on time, basically, and getting the writers to do that. And so that's, I would rather see that, you know, than another sort of big ego that
swallows it. That goes back to Sean's point as well, of having a producer, a script editor, or in this case it would be a lead writer, who would be actually a script editor anyway, because they're in the position of lead writer, and then you just have a bunch of writers underneath that. Mm-hmm. But having that sort of top managerial, for lack of a better term, production position...
Having to worry about locations and everything else, as well as on top of writing a good story, could that be detracting from what he's producing at the moment?
He's done that type of thing before, but then again, Doctor Who is so huge in a way.
Yeah.
And they're producing worldwide.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's tipped his hand a little bit with this, where I think I saw something recently where he wants to do something small. He wants to do something kind of, he didn't say inconsequential, but it's sort of clear, like, yeah, Doctor Who is just this massive thing, and he wants to do, you know, so Russell Davies has done, you know, Cucumber now, which is getting a lot of accolades, but it's not this massive, this big thing, and I think that Moffat really wants to kind of, he is, like you said, under all this pressure with, yeah, Sherlock and Doctor Who, and he wants to do something, you know.
Sort of back to the days when he was doing Coupling.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and look at Coupling. It was 6 to 10 episodes a year,
yeah,
I think. Yes. But a small, you're all talking about that, an ensemble cast, you had your two mains, but you had all the ancillary characters and carried a lot of the weight with like 4 sets, you know, it was a sitcom, so you've got, it's all compartmentalized, it's almost all studio bound, and it's more comic, so you can just go and do that. Doctor Who, everyone now expects, is grand and intergalactic, and it's gotta be that. So you need locations, you need stupendous special effects, and they still don't have that big a budget. And in the past couple of years, the budget's actually been cut,
yeah,
because,
yeah,
of,
yeah,
things going on internally with the BBC and funding. And I mean, one of the things that's actually kept Doctor Who in production, no kidding, literally, is the merchandise sales. So, you know, go buy officially licensed shirts and stuff, because that helps keep the show going.
But it is a massive hit. I mean, it's bigger,
yeah,
than it's ever been. It's just,
right,
not going away anytime soon. But it is that, like you said, the pressure to be massive, the expectations.
And it's all location shooting and the time it takes to do it. I mean, that's where you lose companions and sometimes doctors, because it is a hard slog.
Yeah, and especially for the UK, who,
yeah,
it's not unusual for a UK actor to come to the US and just go, how do you guys do this? Because,
yeah,
US actors go through a lot more than the UK is used to.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard somebody, actually it might have been Moffat, back when the show just relaunched, or was like in the second or third season, said, yeah, and I know it was Moffat, because he said, you'll never see anybody over 40 playing Doctor Who again, because it's just so brutal a production schedule, because they move so much, they travel so much.
And now we have Peter Capaldi.
And now, yeah, he goes and he casts Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, but it's Capaldi.
Yeah.
Yeah. and you've got
Capaldi's a tough guy.
Yeah.
You've got the weather in England, especially in the early part of the year, that it's not real comfortable, and there's a lot of actors that, you know, don't want to do those location shots.
Texas in August.
Yeah, around March. March was still maybe 40 degrees in England or so.
Yeah, that may actually be why Bill Nye turned it down.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Lots of running. Always running.
Yeah, the endless running through quarries.
Yeah, well, David Tennant.
They really cut back to the corridor running in,
yeah,
the series.
Yeah. David Tennant.
It's funny when they throw it in, because it's like, they're running down the corridor.
Yeah.
David Tennant said that his suits could have stood up and walked away by themselves by the end of the season.
Yeah.
They had so much of him inside, like, physically. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's L. It is L.
Even if it's David Tennant's, it's L.
Would it be better to make Doctor Who more intimate again?
Oh.
Define more intimate.
Like prose type stuff?
Well, no.
Oh.
No, no, smaller things.
Smaller things, not these.
They'll lose the audience. It's like the Super Bowl now. You've got to have all the hype around it. It's the only way to make it more intimate is to cancel it, wait another 16 years.
No!
However, you can have moments of intimacy in there.
Yes.
For instance, if you look at Davros is at a scariest when he's considering something and talking real quietly.
Yeah.
But when you look at Davros in the new series, he's just a cackling madman.
Well, in one appearance in the new series, he is literally a cackling madman.
Yes.
And that's the whole point of that,
yeah,
part of Davros, is that he'd been tortured and abandoned, and so he'd completely lost touch with reality.
But the dramatic moments are the smaller ones. They still,
yeah,
are. You know,
yeah,
those are the moments we remember. The effects and everything, I think you're right, that they need them. They're part of the hype and everything, but that's, you know, I don't care about that. It doesn't really matter. It's just the little things that happen. But the BBC expects that. I know Russell wanted the end of David Tennant's story. He wanted that story to actually be just a small, intimate thing. You know, of he's just doing this small situation and saving, you know, sacrificing himself to save somebody. The way in which he sacrificed himself to save Wilf was the only bit of that that made it. All the stuff about Gallifrey coming back and the Master and all the kind of fireworks and everything with that, he really didn't want that in there. But the BBC, it's the pattern was set that, you know, every season there's got to be, you know, a gazillion Daleks in the sky. There's got to be, you know, whatever going on with that. But look, and so that really ties their hands.
Yeah, so like Blink. Blink is
midnight.
Midnight.
Yeah, but now they're talking about doing two-parters this season, a lot more two-parters.
Which I'm happier with because they tell better stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, what I really want is I want 13 episodes, 5 two-parters, 1 three-parter.
Yes.
Prove Colin Baker's reign is perfect, you know. See, they've done everything you've done now.
So who, and obviously I think we agree unanimously that the writer should regenerate, at least now.
I'm sure all for different reasons, but yeah. I think it's just good for the freshness of the show.
So, but who should you who should you regenerate into?
Ouch!
Somebody we've never heard of. That's really what I believe, is somebody we've never heard of.
A Geralt.
Oh, Edgar Wright. Wow.
Edgar Wright.
Oh, boy. Shaun of the Dead guy.
Oh, yes. Among other things.
I don't know if I trust him with a TV series. Space. Yeah, space is pretty awesome. Yeah. But again, it's a smaller scale kind of thing, though. It's not, you know. I don't know. That's an intriguing idea, but it's.
The World's End wasn't terrible. I mean.
No, I like that one.
Yeah.
It was more interesting when it wasn't about aliens invading, actually, but it was.
See, I disagree with that. I was getting bored with it, and then the aliens came. And it's like, oh,
we got different taste in movies. What? Yeah. Well, Toby Whithouse's name has come up a lot. Who wrote?
Being Human.
Yeah, Being Human was the series he produced, and a Doctor Who he's written.
School Reunion.
God Complex.
Yeah.
One guy's name that I've heard mentioned, which I love the guy, I think is a horrible idea, is Paul Cornell, because I don't know if he's got the right experience to be a showrunner. Because he's a novelist, he writes short stories, he writes comic books, he writes for TV, but those are all things you do, you know, with one or two people or by yourself, and the number one Doctor Who fan, one of the most responsible people for surviving the wilderness years.
All-around great guy.
All-around great guy, but...
Make a good script editor, though.
He'd
be nice. Yeah. Ryan follows the same...
Bring him on as like a script editor on a lower thing so that he could get promoted, yeah. But right now, I think he would need... You know, he would be out of his element, and I'm saying that as a friend of Paul Cornell, so...
What about Nick Briggs?
Don't touch Big Finish.
Yeah.
Actually, not necessarily what about Nick Briggs, but actually Gary Russell, who's working in Australia now, but was effectively, in theory, he was script editor, but not in name.
Right.
And especially the big difference you can see, and it's made and brought up on the Torchwood panel, season one of Torchwood was up and down and crazy. Season two, he was script editor.
He's also script editor in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
And Torchwood.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think he's a little...
But Gary Russell said himself in an interview that his job as script editor was not the traditional Doctor Who script editor that Eric Sayward or Terrence Dix was. The script editor job that he had was more about lining up writers and getting the scripts in order, not editing them and either tweaking them or making them better. So he didn't actually do that on either show.
He's also, I think, a little burnt out on Doctor Who, believe it or not.
Yeah,
I don't think that he would do it.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting, but unlikely.
But he's given most of his life to doing Doctor Who. Yeah. So that's a good point.
But
what
about, you know, going back to some of the American, not necessarily the thing, where you have your executive producer, who's like your line producer, and then you have your executive producer who was in charge of the scripts. Like, not to talk Star Trek, but you had Rick Berman, who was sort of the line producer, but you had the other guy who was in charge of, whose name just now escapes me, who was in charge of the writers. He ran the writers' room.
Was that Brandon?
Brandon Braga.
No, not Brandon Braga. No, before him.
he co-created. Oh, what's his name? He co-created DS9.
George Harrison Correction.
Yeah,
that guy.
Yeah.
Brad Hoodoo.
So when you have two people, one sort of the line, they're both equal weight in terms of they're both responsible for the show. So they're working together as a team. One's not higher up or lower than the other.
But there's
two people who are responsible for.
That's still kind of the way they do it. There's three actual producers of the show. Moffat's just one of them. He's mostly the writer's room guy. I don't think he has a lot to do with picking locations and tracking the budgeting. They're still in that situation. It's just Moffat is the showrunner. And he has his other executive producers or producers that do the line production. They're in that situation now.
Did you have someone in mind?
I like Mark Gatiss, actually, to be honest.
I wouldn't have a problem with Mark Gatiss. I know a lot of people that would hate Mark Gatiss.
Yeah,
the problem is, Mark Gatiss, when he's on fire, is brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen him on fire.
And then sometimes, he starts out a good episode and goes off the rails, because he doesn't know when to start.
Has he ever been a producer in that capacity? Did he do that with the League of
Gentlemen? Yeah, him and the other guy pretty much ran that whole thing.
Yeah.
But again, that's
so he has experience.
Weird, bizarre, experimental sketch comedy.
Yeah, but I think he could be good because
it fits the mold of long-term Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Take on that.
But is that maybe the problem? Long-term Doctor Who fan.
What's the best Star Trek movie of the original series?
Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Written and directed by somebody who was not a Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
Oh no, I don't want no, please. It should be somebody who is respectful to the material.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
you don't have to know the material to be
respectful
for it. You don't have to be a huge fan to be respectful.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is what happened with Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Russell T. Davies, Stephen Moffat. I mean, Moffat did the Children in Need Doctor Who. That he loved, but they come from the fandom, the fanzines, the other stuff. You need someone that likes, maybe respects Doctor Who, but isn't, and to use this word, I don't want to make it a bad word, a fanboy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Philip Hedgewood was not a fan.
Yeah.
Barry Letts was not a fan. Barry Letts had directed an episode before.
But the show hadn't been out for 4 years.
It was a different thing then. Yeah. I mean, Verity Lambert wasn't a fan.
Yeah, when Philip Hitchcock took over, the show had achieved its highest ratings ever at that point.
There's an asterisk on that. It was on opposite a BBC News, the BBC Two news program, and ITV was off the air. Literally. Three channels, one of them's not on the air, the other is doing news and educational.
Well, that was season 17. Season 17 got great ratings. City of Death got great ratings because that's when the strike was on the other channel. That's why City of Death got such great ratings, is because there was the strike that hit BBC at the end of Kilt Shada hit and destroyed the other network 6 months earlier.
What do people think of, what's his name, Neil Cross, who did Luther? And he did Hyde.
That's
was the Doctor Who episode that he did
for
Matt Smith. He's a name that's come up in discussions about.
Neil Cross. He's good.
He may have done Hyde, but he also did Rings of Akaten.
That's true.
Yeah, but how long ago was that?
Chris Chibnall,
yeah. But Chris is busy with Broadchurch and. Is Law and Order UK still on?
He will be busy with Broadchurch.
No. Not anymore.
If they want to be controversial, just bring in an American writer.
That would make it new.
George Lucas.
Quentin Tarantino.
Disney. If you're a good enough writer, why does the allergy have to be there for an American influence? I'm being completely serious about this. If you had David Gerrold, for example, or somebody of that caliber who has more skins on the wall with pure science fiction, would it matter what side of the pond you're from?
From a publicity standpoint, yes.
From BBC's point of view,
it's British.
Yes.
It's British.
You never thought you'd hire a blonde James Bond, but people got used to Daniel Craig.
But not an American
James Bond is not owned by the British government, and Doctor Who is. It's a BBC-owned property. The BBC is part of the British government, and they're funded through the license fees on the TVs, and therefore they have to answer to, and there would be outrage. And the newspapers would have a field day, and they would take
Canadian or Australian.
But
that
would at least be the British Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Canadian.
Well, they've never had a Australian or Canadian involved in Doctor Who, and that's sarcasm.
I can see an American writer come in. You know,
as a writer, but not a showrunner.
Neil Gaiman is functionally an American. He has lived in Britain for years. So.
The guy that has anxiously had his hand up for a while.
Well, I had my hand up until he took my comments.
Oh.
I was talking about time, and I would love. Now he probably would never do it because the guy's making Bankers probably arguably the greatest fantasy author alive. But I would love to see Neil Gaiman, who is essentially from both sides of the pond simultaneously, come in for at least a more active consulting role for the show.
Lord knows he could you know, publicize better than anybody else.
Yeah.
I think I would. The tweets alone.
There's got to be somebody with current or recent experience doing show running who isn't necessarily a science fiction person who could fill this role, especially with all the support of the different types of writers that come together to write for Doctor Who.
Which is why Neil Cross was a great suggestion.
And I think that's very intriguing. But I'm thinking, when you guys started the panel, you were talking about the difference between drama and science fiction, and you know everybody has different opinions on where that division begins and ends and is appropriate for Doctor Who, but they both have strengths and weaknesses, so why not?
And all the writers, maybe not all, but most of the writers in the classic series, you know, all wrote for crime drama, they wrote for legal drama, medical shows, all this other stuff.
The one thing I do want to point out about science fiction is, unlike almost every other genre, science fiction is unique. Because all romances are romances. All mysteries are mysteries. All action adventures are action adventures. Science fiction can be any of those with the science fiction element. It is the hardest to pigeonhole. I know, because I'm involved in general interest science fiction fandom, the literary sides of things as well, and I go to a lot of conventions, and you see people at the mystery conventions and say, oh, you like mysteries? Well, here's a great science fiction novel that's got a fabulous mystery. And it's like, no, I don't read science fiction, I only read mysteries.
Yeah.
This is a mystery. No, it's science fiction. It's a mystery, but they're on a spaceship. It's awesome. It's the ultimate confined space mystery. I won't read it because it's... And there have been good science fiction romance novels, and so science... I mean, science fiction can be any genre. And not everything else can do that. That's the greatest thing about it.
So are you saying that science fiction is a Reese's peanut butter cup with your choice?
No, it's not. It's beyond that.
Well,
it's a salad bar.
That's Richard Curtis is a really good example of somebody who did it well.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh my god, Richard Curtis, that guy's going to write a Doctor Who episode. Oh my god, it was great. Well, my son's so anyway. And my mom does that.
Well, actually, Richard Curtis taking over would be awesome. But
well, no, that's taking over.
No. I just ran with that. I kept going. Richard Curtis, be honest.
And I just want to point out that we kind of have the exact same opinion, where science fiction can encompass all genres.
Yes.
All genres can fit into science
this
fiction.
This is true.
Yes.
So I don't think we're disagreeing.
No, I don't think. I just wanted to expand on that. That you were saying wanted to get somebody from outside science fiction.
Right. Well, I just don't want us to be limited by somebody who has to have, we're going to have.
I can certainly see getting somebody from outside Doctor Who science fiction, but having a concept of what makes science fiction special and unique would be ideal, I think. You know, somebody who's a fan of science fiction, not necessarily a fan of Doctor Who, taking over would be great.
Joss Whedon has some free time coming up.
Whoa! Yeah, but he's an American!
Wait, that means something.
Barely.
I'm trying to figure out what it is. What is he doing to Snap Code right now?
He's
gonna leave Marvel.
People are gonna die.
Yeah.
People will die and stay dead.
He did Buffy.
Okay.
I just had one quick comment about the whole, do we need a fanboy to run the show?
I don't actually think it makes a difference either way, because as long as you're not the fanboy who...
Or girl.
Or girl. I'm good with it. Who goes over the line and, you do your job first to be the fanboy second. As long as they do that, like Russell T. Davies did, like Moffat, that's great. But I think you do need a fanboy somewhere near the top, because... not just to keep the loose continuity in line, but also
Ian Levine.
Oh my God! Security.
His name now is going to show up. But one of the things as a fan that I like is when they put in something in an episode that someone who doesn't get the in joke won't lose anything.
Exactly.
But those fans like us, who do get the in joke, it's extra for us, and somebody outside Doctor Who couldn't do that.
That's absolutely right.
Right, and there's a balance there. There are some times where they go too far to over-explain the in joke.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, people overreact to.
Yes.
I said this example on a panel yesterday, I think. Good Man Goes to War. What?
Slice the one.
Oh. Okay.
No.
Oh, okay.
Finish the example.
Good Man Goes to War. Cybermen space wheels in the background.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really cool. People were complaining. Why did you have to do that? That was an obvious fan wank. It's just going to confuse older fans. How is it going to confuse new fans? How is it going to confuse new fans? Because you're in space, and you've got aliens, and there's their spaceship. If you're a classic series fan and you get the early Cybermen, you're going, yes! If you're not, it's just, oh, there's spaceship. There's nothing wrong with doing it like that. That's actually attention to detail.
All right, so that was actually a lot of fun to sit in on and take part in. Some of the things that got broached, obviously, we've talked a little bit about here before, you know, the British writer's room versus the American version, and, you know, a lot of great insights from the people on the panel, too.
Right, and I think there was a general tone, not that the show is bad now or that it's terrible and that's why Stephen Moffat needs to go. It's just that they're ready for something new and a fresh take on it, and it's probably about time. You know, RTD went for 4 years. Moffat just finished his fourth year. You know, maybe it is time for somebody else to come in and we'll see what they can do.
Yeah, and one of the things that I loved hearing, too, was the fact that everybody kind of agreed, yes, we need fresh blood in there just to keep everything going, but... they all had very different reasons for wanting new people in there. It was very entertaining to see that.
Mm.
So,
well, I guess again, just like any collective fan discussion, you get all sorts of different perspectives on the nature of what's working or not working. I think whenever you've got professional writers involved in the discussion, though, it's not necessarily a matter that you sort of defer to their expertise, but it's always interesting to get that from the trenches perspective, whether or not they are... I've sat in on panels with Jane Espenson discussing not only her own work, but when she starts discussing other writers that she appreciates, or, you know, sort of looking at their work from within the industry, but outside of that topic or outside of that subject material.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's something where you get, okay, all right, well, you know, this isn't like you're not protecting your own baby here, but you have full working knowledge of the maternity ward, so to speak.
Right.
And that's always really, really interesting, because they generally will give you a lot more of the business-oriented perspective as well, which is just something that the average fan just doesn't want to discuss. I don't want to talk about this as a franchise. I want to talk about this as a series of stories and characters that I love. So,
yeah. And one of the topics that I did want to talk about just briefly is, like we heard in the panel, that some people think that the show is getting too scary now, while others, like, I mean, we heard Tim saying that, you know, sitting down and watching the show with his son, you know, he has no problem with him watching the new stuff, but going back and watching like Genesis of the Daleks was intense, and that's scary. So it's, what do you guys feel? Is it too intense for kids now, or might it have been too intense for kids back then, or are people just, you know, way too sensitive?
I think it's always been a show where certain episodes might be too intense for some children, but mm-hmm. in general, most of the show is okay.
I think there is too great of a variety of levels of conditioning for kids within certain families as well. I mean, you take, you know, our big release this weekend for the second Avengers film, and when we went to go see it, we had 6 and 7 year olds sitting behind us, like literally in the row right behind us.
I would hate to be a 6 or 7 year old sitting behind you, Kier.
Well, you know, we had a lot of deep discussions about some fascinating topics and sharing the ability to generate sounds. But
I meant because you're tall, but okay.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, well, whatever. Take it as you will. You know.
Of course, Haley'd hate to be sitting behind you as she is now.
I found the perfect seat, and then some tall guy sat down right in front of me. I had to move. Anyway, you're going to make a point.
Well, the end result is just the matter of, you know, with a couple of kids, say, under the age of 10 that were right around me. There was one that spent the entire screening under her dad's armpit. let me know when the scene is over. And then there was, a 5-year-old just off my left shoulder that was riveted to the entire thing and was explaining things to his sister, his older sister, who wasn't quite following some of the more complicated battle sequences. So it's, you know, as far as just the subjective nature of every household dynamic, the choices among parenting about what they get exposed to, so they may or may not be sort of conditioned to handle certain things, or just how it happens to strike them, you know, some of the stuff that they may see in the classic episodes that are just, the sheer design of them was so out there that it takes certain kids by surprise. Whereas the stuff now, you know, as long as you offset it with a Strax appearance here or there, sort of keeps it within the realm of okay. But this has always been a hide behind the couch show. I mean, that's one of its unofficial taglines. So,
yeah, that's true. All right. Well, like I said, it was a lot of fun to sit in on and actually get, you know, far more perspectives than just the three of us. So it was great actually being there. And if, honestly, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, when people are on the fence about whether or not to go to smaller conventions like this, this is exactly why I encourage it, because these are the kind of discussions that you get to have. It's not, let's go in here and sit and listen to somebody tell a story about that I've heard, you know, 8 different times. It's, let's go and actually talk to other fans and get into the kind of discussions that we love to do as geeks. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we keep getting exposed to this over and over. Every time we attend one of these, you know, under 2,000 attendees or something like that con, especially something that's within a single fandom like this.
Yeah.
It's a great experience. So seek them out. I'm not sure we'll have to do a little bit of scouring, but you know, again, we put the request out every once in a while for folks. If you've got one coming to your area that you want to give a little bit of a heads up to, you know, even if it's not exclusively just a Who con, you know, we're just coming off this weekend. Tonight is the wrap up for the LI Geek convention, which had Who and Game of Thrones and Tron and Outlander and a bunch of other fandoms all represented there. But those are the kind of ones, you know, if you've got something in your neck of the woods and you want people to hear about it, or you want to see if anyone else within the listening area is attending to hopefully cross paths with them, let us know. And we'll promote it shamelessly.
Exactly. Yeah. I know the
we
next one
be that bought for a very low price.
Normally just some vodka or something. Yeah. It's insane.
Or decent ginger beer.
This is true.
Or a halfway decent ginger beer. It doesn't matter.
Good vodka and decent ginger beer, or good ginger beer and decent vodka. It works out. So I know the next one that we're planning on attending as a group, hopefully, is the LI Who in New York. So yep, I'm really
that's not
looking
until
forward.
November. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to try. We've got, I don't know what it's going to work out for everybody's collective plans. We do have Kineticon here in my neck of the woods. It takes place in Hartford in July. But I know that there are a couple that I'm missing that I've seen them scroll by for the Seattle area. And I think there might be another one in the, it's like a little miniaturized version of the Chicago TARDIS cons. But yeah, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to Dallas Fan Expo, Dallas Comic Con at the end of May. I know Comicpalooza is coming up and some of the Gun and Geek people are going to that.
Yeah, but
so we're sorry in advance.
Those are bigger ones.
Yeah, those are bigger ones. I mean, still worth going. It's always a blast going to conventions like this, man.
Yeah.
Right. All right, so we ready for some news?
Let's do news.
All right, so the first news story that we've got, and honestly, I don't know why. If you haven't already done this, then you know you really need to go over to the Big Finish website, or just click the link in the show notes at gallifreypublicradio.com/135, and go ahead and get some free Big Finish coming your way.
Free, the best kind of Big Finish.
It's my favorite price.
Yep, they have released to sort of celebrate the release of the Defectors. They're giving away the first episode, so you can get a little bit of a Sylvester McCoy fix in there. Also, some other great stuff has been coming out of Big Finish just in the last couple of weeks. They have been keeping the announcements coming on an almost daily basis with all of the stuff that they've finally gotten to the point of production and release. We're looking forward on the horizon to Unit Extinction and everything else they've been coming away with. So Terrahawks, if you want to get your marionette sci-fi action on. I mean, Terrahawks is a hell of a lot of fun. And it is just as kind of campy schmaltzy as you recall. It's definitely worth a listen to if you have not been exposed to that kind of, that kind of material before. Have some fun with it. You've got some new Tom Baker stuff has been released for people that want to stay within the Whovian scope, because you know they keep going out to his to do recordings at his house, and as long as he wants to continue to put his voice into a can, they will give him his $5 and thank him very much. Tons of material coming out and more on the horizon just within the next couple of months.
Yeah, now, Kier, you've been doing the Gallifrey series recently, right?
Yes. I wanted to make sure that I had got myself all through the sixth series of Gallifrey. So basically, it had been on my short list. I'd gotten sort of an endorsement from Bobby Honeycutt and some of our other listeners that it's absolutely worth your time investment. And you know right from the jump when you're hearing Romana, you're hearing Leela, you're hearing K-9, and they're dealing with Narvin and the whole, you get some of the political structure within Gallifrey, but you also get their heavy involvement from the CIA, not that CIA, the CIA, but the position of the Time Lords as part of a temporal power. We think about like these kind of Cold War politics that we have within world powers here, now deal with that where instead of nuclear weaponry, there's this control over the over temporal technology and things of that sort. And it's just really, really interesting, but it's a great walk down adventures with characters that you haven't been able to hear enough from. And the whole President Romana is just a great angle to give you that insight. So lots of fun. And K-9. Enough K-9. Multiple K-9s. There's K-9 units talking to K-9 Prime. Amazing.
There's enough K-9 for Kier, so that should tell you something.
Just about enough.
One thing I'm really looking forward to is the Doom Coalition that's coming out soon. I can't wait for that one. That's going to be good. So, but yeah,
and if you have no idea what we're talking about, make sure you spend more than enough time over at bigfinish.com. So,
yeah, because pretty much anything you get from them is going to be golden. So, definitely check it out. All right. So the next little news article that we've got is actually from Maisie Williams has come out and talked about her time shooting her episodes Doctor Who and said that she's actually had a lot of fun with it.
Was her word. It was fun.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see someone who's not really, and she's admitted that she's not a huge fan of the show, but she feels like she's absorbed enough of it over the time that she can get in on the fun of it. So, very interesting to see someone who's not necessarily one of us taking part in things. So,
we've had a number of actors on the program who from their early stages were sort of getting an immersion course.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not unusual, and it's not disastrous by any means. I don't know if this, if you're gathering from this based on her kind of, her just enjoying it along the way kind of thing, as she accounts her experiences on set, that she's going to be with the show in any more permanency, because everyone was sort of wondering whether she had, this was a foot in the door But I'm not getting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's probably kind of busy doing some other things.
Just some a minor little show on some no-name network.
Right.
No, it's never going to take off. All right. And then we've kind of talked about this one a little bit from time to time over the past couple weeks, where Moffat said that there's not going to be a Doctor Who movie, and then Sony came out and said, no, we're talking about it, and it's going to happen. And now Moffat's coming back and saying no again. So,
yeah, let me make this clearer than clear.
No.
Well, it's because, you know, he was the one in the first place that had sort of opened the door with the interview that was sort of phrased in such a way that said, oh, yeah, you know, it could certainly happen.
Yeah.
But then he had to, well, not recant, but just say, well, think about it. Anything could.
Yeah. He had happen. To preface it.
Yeah. So, right. Do you really want it to happen?
They talked again about how some of the logistics of that would be hard, given that there's a doctor on TV now. So do you do a different doctor, or does it have to fit in with the story they're telling with the doctor they have? And I was wondering, you know, what if they took Paul McGann's doctor and put that in a movie? But I don't think they will.
Yeah, because that couldn't possibly go wrong. Oh, wait. One of the things that I enjoyed about him saying this, though, was that, you know, he kind of points it out and he says, you know, I'm sure there's money to be made out of it, but that's not the point, is it? So it's like, I appreciate that so much. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, he is running a business.
Yeah, but yeah, there's
but
a
it's
certain
the BBC. It's about the art.
All right, and then the next little bit that we've got here, there's a site. If you go over to Den of Geeks, they actually have done a great job of kind of putting all the information that we have about Series 9 all together. So if you haven't heard anything yet, if you've avoided spoilers and then decided, you know, it's time to rip off the Band-Aid, you've got all the information you could possibly want all at the touch of a button here.
Mm-hmm. Spoilers, there's going to be a Series 9.
Can't believe you ruined that for me.
The anticipation was killing me.
I mean, a lot of these stories we've already talked about, and a lot of stuff, it's new information about the same kind of stories and things, but yeah. It's just kind of a great place to look and be like, okay, and yeah, I'm caught up. I know everything that's coming now, so.
Yes, it's a. There are a few sites out there that do these sort of, you know, call them all together. You know, the Doctor Who keeps its own sort of running synopsis and that sort of thing. But this is one thing that I enjoy about the Den of Geek collection is that it is cross-linked to all of the source material as these things are appended on. So with every update, you know, if you want to find out, well, was that exactly what the nature of that announcement was? You can go back and check. Oh, okay, it came from the Radio Times. They said this, this, and this, and it's all pretty well, pretty concise. And they're very quick. I mean, they update their content, you know, 6-7 times a day. Mm-hmm. So if anything hits that's of note, you'll know it's in there by the end of the broadcast day.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and then unfortunately, some sad news. Rex Robinson has passed away.
This was for those of you who were, you know, pretty well immersed in the classic era, or even if you weren't fully immersed. I mean, if you'd seen just some of the episodes that we had recommended along the way, if you had had a chance to see Hand of Fear for Fourth Doctor, or if you did get a chance to see the Three Doctors, you would have seen him, Robinson, playing Dr. Tyler in there. So was a great component of the show's starring. Got a chance to. To share the screen with a number of our doctors and a number of exceptional directors who forged classic Who for what it is today. So
but he will definitely be missed. So all right, and then the last little bit of news that we've got is coming in October, the Doctor Who Symphonic Spectacular will be coming to New York City.
Mm-hmm. So this is something, I mean, the Symphonic Spectacular that they do, you've probably seen clips out of it where they have the full orchestration, but there's also character involvement and a little bit of scripting and some things that goes along with it as well. So it is kind of both a visual as well as the auditory experience. And there are a number of tours that go along with it. So you've got, you know, one that obviously runs through the UK, and you've got another one that goes through the Australian market, I think?
I think so, yeah.
And through New Zealand? Yeah, and another one that comes through the States. Well, the one that's coming through the States is going to be specifically just a single show in New York City. You can bet your bippy that I will be there. So it'll be in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center on October 7th. The New York shows will be two performances done that day, and they will be hosted by Michelle Gomez. So how can you possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a ton of fun right there. All right. Well, that's all the news that we've got for this week. Next week, we kind of got an interesting idea from a listener, Soleil, who wrote in and asked us, if you could change anything about the show, what would it be? You know, how would you improve the show with a change? So we're kind of taking that premise, and what we're deciding to do is we're each going to try and come up with something from from past and then moving forward into the future. Two things that we would like to change about the show and how we think that it would improve the show, given, canon or just story-wise or whatever. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with this.
I like the idea because it's not something where it's just a matter of, oh, I couldn't stand that character in this episode, so I'm going to, strike them from the record. This isn't something that's as small as just, I wish Fear Her was never filmed. Or whatever the case may be. Right. As valid as you may think that may be. And we're not going to argue that point much. But this is something where, I sort of see it as putting yourself in the showrunner's shoes for a single day.
Yeah.
And saying, you are taking the operation of the Doctor Who franchise and making a decision on something that you think is going to aid the show. If we're doing the one from the past, what was one little steering correction you would have made that you think would have made some sort of a lasting improvement to where we are now? And then the flip side of that is, what's one thing that you think you could do at the moment that will assist where Doctor Who will be 1, 5, 10, 50 years from now? So this is a good hypothesis.
Yeah. And so we're definitely looking for you to give us your feedback, because this is a prime time to get your opinion in there and let us know what's the one thing that you would love to change or the one direction you want the show to go now. So please definitely write us in or write to us at, any of the ways you can contact us, email, Facebook, Twitter, voicemail, whatever you choose. It's all there. And we would love to include those in the show next week.
Yes. We have feedback. A voicemail line.
You're going to make me actually remember that number.
It's one of those things.
It's got 10 digits in it.
There's some numbers and some more numbers.
There's a 3. I'm pretty sure there's a 3 in it.
I think there might be a 3. It's a...
Okay.
You can
put a 9er in there?
So you can call our voicemail line at 210-802-1477.
Yeah, it's like it had a 3 in it, but it doesn't. It's a silent 3.
It's a silent 3.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Although I think if you do call up GallifreyPublicRadio.com on your phone, it's a click to call. So you have no excuse.
And for the international listeners, we do have the SpeakPipe on the website. So if you go to the website, there should be a little banner on the side that you can click that and just record a voice memo directly to the site.
Whoa, so, SpeakPipe.
Yeah.
Do we have to do we have to declare that at customs or something? What the hell is a speak pipe? It sounds like something I'm using to talk to the guys down in the engine room of the sub. Hold on.
No, I get them imported.
The cans across the gap between you and your neighbor's house?
That's my speak pipe.
I get them imported from Ireland. That's what it is.
I'm hereby decreeing that anytime you refer to that product, you have to do it in a Sean Connery voice. It's a speak pipe.
Nice.
I'm speaking to a speak pipe. Nice, cool.
I thought we were going to go with the 40s Telecaster kind of thing. I'm calling in, from the speak pipe.
California Public Radio is on the air. You are go on the speak pipe.
Next week's whole episode is in that voice.
Oh, God.
It's like a long episode of Korra. What right. will they do?
Well, this has been episode 135 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, Joss Whedon for showrunner 2016.
This is Kier saying, I don't know what you two are complaining about. I'm perfectly sober and fine.
And this is Haley saying, play more games.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Elsie.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. or visit forums.gungeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Downright Public Radio is copyright 2015.